Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Winnie the Pooh may have made honey famous with his constant cravings for the sweet stuff, but honey has been a staple of many cuisines and cultures for thousands of years. Honeybees make it by converting the nectar from flowers they pollinate. The ooey-gooey, sticky sweetness is hard to resist. I'm just reading it, folks. And there are so many things you can do with it when you cook. Diane Witten of the Saratoga County Cornell Cooperative Extension is here, who, by the way, Diane, a veteran of this program, as well as beekeeper Rick Green. They're here to answer your questions about producing, harvesting, cooking, and baking with honey. Diane Witten is a food and nutrition educator. She has written a farmer's market recipe column in the Saratogian newspaper for 10 years and has just published a cookbook, Farmer's Market Favorite Recipes. Rick Green runs Ballston Lake Apiaries, where he raises honeybees and sells honey all over the region. He's published a beginner's guide to beekeeping called Apis mellifera, a.k.a. honeybees. What do you do with honey? Do you want to know more about it? Well, give us a call now and share your questions and stories, recipes, if you will, on this fine Food Friday. Number to call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And a reminder, for more information about our Food Friday guests and some of the recipes mentioned on the show, visit WAMC.org. You can also email us if you wish, voxpop@WAMC.org. You can call us, 1-800-348-2551. Tweet if you like. That's always a good thing to do. It's WAMC Vox Pop. Or you can go to our Facebook page, WAMC Radio. There's a Vox Pop post there. You can go to our website, WAMC.org/Vox Pop, and comment there. But we do like your calls, 1-800-348-2551. Always exhausted after the introduction of the show. So, Diane and Rick, you get to take it from here. Diane, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Ray. Nice to be here.
I can barely see you over all the honey on the console here. And Rick, nice to have you here as well. Now, you've been on the air many times on WAMC, and you've been in this studio. Nice to have you here on a Food Friday.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. So the first question, before we get too far into this, was written by my friend Jean, who's listening. She's listening down in Florida, and she wants to know how many times you've been stung and if you've ever gotten to enjoy it.
You never get used to it. It still hurts.
Really?
But if you take precautions, go in the middle of the day, wear a good suit, use a smoker, you can minimize the number of stings to a dozen or two a year.
Yikes. And so you're not allergic, obviously.
No.
That would tend to preclude a career in this sort of thing.
Tend to, yes. Well, it keeps the riffraff out.
Well, ha-ha! Very, very well played. And what does the smoke exactly do? The bees don't like the smoke?
Well, they've evolved a strategy. If their house is burning down, let's eat as much honey as we can because we have to leave this place. So when you blow smoke, you kind of fool them. And they think, uh-oh, the house is burning down. We're going to fill our belly. They're not interested in stinging. It gives you 5 or 10 minutes to do your thing.
Very interesting indeed. And Diane, you know, you've brought jams and such on previous programs. You've been on 1 or 2 times in the past, right?
Right. Two times before.
Two times before. And this time you brought, my God, you brought chocolate chip cookies made with honey. And
I've,
you know, as part of my show prep, I've actually had to have a couple.
and the rest of the staff.
And I got to tell you, they're pretty good. So we'll talk about all the honeys that Rick has brought and your baked goods and some of the jams and such. In a little bit, we'll get to the eating portion of our program. But let's go right to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Roscoe in Rosendale, you're first.
Well, it's Rocco.
Rocco, sorry, buddy.
No problem. The best thing you can make with honey is a recipe that's probably about 10,000 years old. It's called honey wine or mead.
Yeah, well, guess what? We have some here.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
My favorite kind of honey of mead to make is made with apple cider instead of water.
Bam.
Use 1 part apple cider, 3 parts honey, and let it ferment for about 6 months.
You're a genius. Rick, go ahead.
That's what I brought. I just got my license a year ago, and I use nothing but cider. Yeah, I think you're right on it. It's mellow. It's stronger. It's like a dessert wine. It has legs in the glass. I'm with you. Excellent drink.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Rocco.
Thanks.
I appreciate the call. So there are different types of mead, Rick?
Absolutely.
Okay, so yours is made with cider.
Cider.
And are there some that it's just honey?
Well, some of the more traditional recipes, less expensive to make, is water and honey.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's jacked up with spices. This is referred to as a sizer, It's made with cider.
CY?
Yeah.
Sizer. Okay.
CY.
All right, here we go. Let's try it.
Uh-oh.
What do you mean, uh-oh?
Well, the show will go downhill now. You'll be looped.
Oh, my gosh. It's very good.
It only has the alcohol content of, like, wine, right?
Yeah. It's a 13%, 12%, 13%.
Well,
a year and a half sitting in the bottle.
Okay. And does it get better?
Mead will get better for a few years, and then they say it'll decline. But you've got 4 or 5 years. It never lasts that long.
It's delicious. And you can really taste the honey. And it has it. It's pretty strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not bad at all. You're not having any?
After the show, right now, I'm struggling to pay attention.
No, well, I have that effect on people. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Sure don't want the guests to nod off here. Let's see. This is an email question from Maggie. When are you going to start making your honey rice crispy treats again?
Oh,
she knows you, apparently.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, this is a full court press. Well, I made them for 4 or 5 years, and I discovered I could make more money selling mead than Rice Krispies. But I promise I will make some more Rice Krispies this year. It's simple to make.
Yeah, well, let's have the recipe.
Honey, Rice Krispies, you know, mix it all up. You know, it's
no marshmallows?
Quite simple. Oh, well, some people don't like to hear marshmallows because it's a sugar and stuff. But yeah, marshmallow, basically honey and Rice Krispies.
So, Diane, the chocolate chip cookies, which are so good, you've replaced all the sugar in there with honey?
Yes, except for the sugar that's in the chocolate chips themselves,
so
but they are bittersweet chocolate chips. And yeah, there's no sugar in there. It's all honey.
Mm.
And so the best thing I recommend if you want to bake with honey is to use a recipe that is made for honey. You know, the recipe's already formulated, but you can make substitutions.
You know, in interest of the program and making it as good as it can be, I better have another one.
Help yourself. Yeah, a lot of people want to try to substitute their, you know, sugar with honey, and you can do that if you have a recipe, your own chocolate chip cookie recipe, and you just want to use honey instead. They say you can substitute it, like, you got to kind of experiment. You might start with just substituting about half of the sugar with honey.
Yeah.
And then you usually reduce the amount of liquid in it a little bit.
This is pretty good. I got mead, I got chocolate chip cookies, and callers on the line. All right, so I'll eat and drink, and we'll talk to Kim in Canajoharie. Kim, you're on. Or not. Kim, are you there?
Hello.
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 Hello. You're
Hi
on.
Hi there. Thank you. I have a quick question about honeybees in their natural environment.
Okay.
I understand that honey is important to have in the hive year-round as part of temperature control and part of being able to feed the bees. Now, how do we justify removing the honey as much as we do? It's a huge market. Doesn't that kill off the bees?
Well, there's a rule of thumb. You stack boxes. A hive consists of 2, 3, 4, and as the season grows, maybe 5, 6 boxes. You never take the honey in the bottom two. The bottom two is their winter food. They need 120 pounds or they won't get through the winter. So in the fall, I harvest down to the two on the bottom, leave it alone. That's enough for them to get through the winter.
Oh, wow. And that gets left in there indefinitely.
Well, hopefully until March, you know, early April. As soon as the dandelions come out, there's such an abundance of nectar that they don't have to live off the surplus from last year. But usually the two boxes, 120 pounds, will get them through the winter.
How many bees will get through the winter with that?
The hive. And maybe they start 60,000, and they might dwindle to 30,000, 20,000.
But that's normal?
Yes.
Mm, okay. Kim, you want to follow up?
Well, let's see. If the honey is removed from the top bottom boxes, what happens to the bees then?
Well, we have different techniques. There's one technique that I've used for years called a fume board. And you put it on the very top of the hive, and it forces the bees out of that top box. And then they get scrunched into the bottom boxes. And then you hurry away with that box, and you extract it. And you do it, but you always leave two boxes. That's their, you know, that's their winter food.
Hmm. All right.
Do those hives need to be brought indoors in the wintertime?
No, but interesting, in Montreal, I spoke with beekeepers years ago, they actually bring them inside, extract most of the honey, and feed them back sugar water, and they put them in temperature-controlled buildings in the ground, because in the winter, they don't have, in Montreal and Canada, they don't have the temperature. I mean, the bees actually have to fly a little in the winter. It sounds crazy, but make a long story short, you just leave the honey there, you leave them alone, and hope they make it. A lot of them don't.
All right, Kim, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. Rick, how long have you been doing this?
Oh, 35 years.
What brought you to it?
Interesting. My folks ran a restaurant up in Potsdam, and I was a kid, and all these men said, oh, my God, let's hurry outside, and a pine tree fell, and all these bees are crawling around in the snow, and I thought, that's interesting. Bees in the winter. I lived near a beekeeper in Rochester, and he got me started, and I started with one or two hives, and, you know, like any hobby that's going to take, it either dies or grows, and mine just became a business.
That's terrific. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Diane Witten, who is a food nutrition educator, and Rick Green of Ballston Lake Apiaries, and we'll welcome your calls and have some more mead and try some of the different honeys and things we have here. It's a Food Friday. Join us.
Support for WAMT comes from Cafe Capriccio. Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grant Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. Saratoga County Tourism, the 17th annual Chowder Fest held in historic downtown Saratoga Springs, tomorrow 11 to 4, with chowder tastings from over 70 local restaurants. ILoveSaratoga.us. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Ave in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty items, and prepared foods, honestweight.coop. And Fleury Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton, providing advice and assistance for projects small and large, items such as Benjamin Moore paints, hardwood, flooring, Anderson windows, Trex decking, tools, lumber, hardware, FleuryLumber.com.
The fun drive starts on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Alan Chartok in the big chair and Fun Drive Pledge Central, and we hope you join us for that. And if you have not done so and you want to do so, go to our website, WAMC.org, and feed the lockbox. We're almost there. We're almost to the halfway point in the whole drive. And if we hit that, we hit 500,000 before 6 a.m. on Monday. We get another 10,000 from Berkshire Bank. So WAMC.org is the place to go. Everything raised between now and Monday at 6 a.m. counts on Monday at 6 a.m. Could be a short drive with your help. It's a Vox Pop on WAMC. Friday is Food Friday, and today we talk honey with Diane Witten and Rick Green. And, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer, has put crackers out with something delicious looking on it. What do we have here, Diane?
That's my blueberry jam that's made with honey, and there's no sugar in there. It's just made with honey, and I think it looks a little different, although it's a beautiful purple color, isn't it? The color is gorgeous. And
say something while I eat this.
And the recipe, actually, I got from when you make honey. This is a jam recipe made with the powdered pectin. So right on the pectin box itself, they have some recipes, and in there it says you can use sugar or honey. So I just used the honey.
It's plenty sweet.
Yeah.
Delicious.
It's got a different flavor. It's, you know, that honey flavor really
it's
comes
funny.
Through.
You know, in the mead, you can taste the honey quite well. And in this jam, you can taste the honey quite well. It's very strong and strong characteristic to the flavor. Rick, there are several different honeys here.
Yes.
They all look very, very different. What do we have here?
Actually, I brought two flavored honeys. Most honey in New York State is this light colored.
Yeah, golden.
Golden. You can see through the glass. It's largely clover and wildflower, May, June, and July. We have a special honey in August referred to as buckwheat. I see a caller has a question on buckwheat.
All right.
But that's a dark black, very strong honey. Different flavor altogether.
All right. Our producer is going to try some. You're going to feed me honey?
Yes.
Wow. What a life I have, I'll tell you that. Oh, that's delicious. Oh, that's delicious. So that's the standard clover honey.
Clover, wildflower.
Oh, God, it's good. All right. And we'll get to the other one, which is you said is buckwheat?
Buckwheat.
And then you have one that is opaque, and that is also honey as well, correct?
Very popular in Europe and Canada. It's called cream honey, spun honey, whipped honey. raw honey, basically it's crystallized. If I warmed this crystallized honey, it would become the lighter one.
Huh.
It spreads like a peanut butter.
So how do you... So at room temperature, it stays that...
Yes. There's
creamy?
A process, came from Cornell many years ago, called the DICE process, and you crystallize it in about a week or so. I have two huge refrigerators, and I'm running them all the time. You hold honey at a certain temperature, you put seed crystals in, and about a week and a half, it crystallizes. It's half as sweet, spreads like peanut butter, very healthy.
Oh, my gosh. I love that.
Very healthy.
I love that. All right, let's go back to the phones. Tracy in Guilderland. Tracy.
Yes, hi. I have a couple of questions. The first is I would like to know if there's a correlation between eating local honey and having it have a positive effect on allergies. And then the other thing I would like to know is when I'm buying honey, I always try to buy it from our local farms and orchards in the area. But sometimes I see raw honey, and then sometimes I see honey that has been processed in some other way, pasteurized, I believe. And I just wanted to know the differences and the benefits of those.
Okay, two very different questions, but go ahead.
All right, number one, eating local honey. Research shows, and it's sketchy, but docs will say, eat local honey. And the advice is well given, because local honey has in it local pollen. And when your immune system sees a little trace of pollen, it says, oh, I'll get ready and I'll fight this if I ever see it in the future. So I have customers that are buying pollen in bags or just eating my local honey, and it helps them develop a resistance to their pollen allergies.
That's it has great. To be raw honey, though, right?
Well, better that it's raw, because if you heat or filter honey, you damage and filter out the pollen. The pollen are the big molecules, and so if you pasteurize, your second question, if you pasteurize honey, you're really left with sugar water, because all the goodness, the 2% in honey of the minerals and the vitamins and the pollen will be damaged by excessive heat. So good honey hasn't been heated.
Okay, great. I will start buying raw honey all the time. Thank you.
And please buy local honey.
Rick will
appreciate that.
Yeah, I've got to say this. Supermarkets would like the honey to sit on the shelf for years until it's sold. Good honey will crystallize, because if you haven't heated it, it will crystallize. So I would strongly suggest buying local honey, because it hasn't been excessively heated. Nobody wants it to sit on the shelf for a long time, and it's better for you.
I'm amazed that there aren't regulations that say, boy, even if you're a local provider, you have to pasteurize this. There are so many things that have to be pasteurized to be sold.
Don't give anyone any ideas.
Oh, gosh. Don't heat honey. It turns out if you heat honey and pasteurize it, it may be good for infants, because infants shouldn't eat honey, because you can actually get rid of bad things in honey that little babies can't handle. Mm-hmm. So little babies shouldn't eat raw honey.
Okay.
Yeah, the recommendation is that infants under the age of one don't eat honey.
I did not know.
There could be some tiny bit of botulism spore in honey. Mm-hmm. I mean, the botulism spore could be anywhere. It could be in the soil. So if your kid's outside playing, they could get it. But the one thing that you can control is their intake through honey. So they recommend not to have that, or not to give it to infants. And it has to do with their gastrointestinal tract. It's not fully formed. So there's not quite as much strong acid in there to break down that little bit of botulism spore.
Okay. Well, hopefully I will have no more one-year-olds in my household.
You've had enough. You've had five.
Not,
right?
Knock wood. Isaiah in Albany. I hope I have that right. No, I don't.
No, it's Isla.
Oh, Isla. I'm sorry. You're on.
That's okay. Love the station. I feel like I'm in New York City again. Just love it.
Thanks.
The question has to do with the story I heard a few years back about thousands of bees that died at the same time. And my question is, do you have any idea what happened? And did this, in fact, affect the quality of honey and the price of honey that subsequently went way up?
It actually has. Bees can die for a variety of reasons in the winter. I worked as a nurse once. One of the principles of nursing is keep the number of stressors to a minimal. Well, in the winter, the bees are stressed. If they go in with diseases like mites, they're stressed. And they could die in the winter because there's not enough food. But one of the big killers in the past few years is called colony collapse syndrome. And for some reason, the bees will march right out into the snow. I mean, it's suicide. And that's another cause for bees dying in the winter.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
Thank you very much.
And it's contributed to the higher price of honey, because you know, there's fewer. I sell hives each year to people that get started. A lot of people want to get started, but it's hard to keep them going through the winter.
If you want to get started with something like this, Rick, do you have to have a high pain threshold?
Well, you could drink a lot of mead. That would help.
I'm feeling no pain at the moment, but I don't plan on getting a hive. But, I mean, how many people are interested in this thing as
well,
a hobby?
In Saratoga, where Diane works at the Cornell Cooperative Extension, there's a nice club up there called the Southern Adirondack Beekeepers Association. You know, they can vary from 40 to 70 members. Half are women. It's a very strong organization, and they're all around the country. And if you want to learn, that's one good way of getting started.
Can there be a bad honey? And if you're starting out, can you get honey that, oh, God, this didn't come out well?
Well, the purple loosestrife, the invasive weed from Europe, it's a very sharp flavor. I don't personally like it. Rhododendron honey is notorious for making people sick, and there was things.
Really?
So you
don't do that one?
No.
All right.
But if you process honey and don't heat it, it'll come out fine. It's a very natural product.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Gary in Gloversville. Gary, you're on.
Yes. I'd like to know if anybody is making any local buckwheat honey, or because I've been buying buckwheat honey for 30 or 40 years. And I've been told the buckwheat honey that I'm buying locally doesn't really come from our immediate area. It comes from outside our area, down maybe in Brazil, China. Is that true?
I produce a little bit of buckwheat each year. There's a farm on Route 67 that grows it and plows it under. And there used to be a dentist down in Del Mar that grew fields of it. Usually fields of buckwheat are grown and plowed under to fix nitrogen and make the soil better. We used to have mills in Ballston Lake. I know farmers that said that as a kid they worked in Ballston Lake and they harvested bags of buckwheat. It's no longer grown in the eastern part of New York State, but it is grown in the western part of New York State in larger numbers. You have to look where the buckwheat processing mills are. Now it's grown by a few farmers, and you can find it, move your hive next to it, you're going to get buckwheat in August.
And Rick sells his honey at the Saratoga Farmers Market and the Spas City Farmers Market and some local stores, right?
Thanks
for
the plug.
Healthy Living Market.
what a team you make. All right, Gary, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We talk honey on this Food Friday with Diane Whitten and Rick Green and you. Let's go to Mark in Middlefield. Mark, you're on.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
I always like hearing about honeybees. I have a few hives, but every year I'd like to share a honey teriyaki sauce that I give to people at Christmas time, which works as a marinade or just throw it in a stir fry or anything. It's really
sounds great.
Kind of tasty.
Yeah.
Just a cup of honey, a cup of soy sauce, and a cup of sake.
Ooh,
and
sake.
Much freshly grated ginger and freshly grated garlic as you dare. And let it sit for a couple of weeks, you know, bottle it up. And
do you strain it before you bottle it?
I leave all that stuff right in it.
Awesome.
All right. Sounds delicious.
Excellent. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the, someone had called earlier about the easiest thing you can make about honey with honey, and he said the mead, but I was thinking salad dressings.
Yeah, well, I would do that and marinate pork chops.
Yeah,
yep.
The honey
pork
teriyaki,
pork.
Yeah. Chicken. So a marinade is super easy to do, or a honey poppy seed salad dressing is one of my favorites.
Yeah, sounds good, too.
Thanks, Mark. We appreciate the input.
Sure.
Have a good one. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Jim in North Pownell, you're on, Jim.
Hey, great show.
Thank
Absolutely
you.
Great show.
Appreciate
I got
it.
Just two comments. I gave up cooking with sugar about 30 years ago. I use honey in everything. And I usually substitute about a third of a cup of honey for a half a cup of sugar, and it works out pretty well in most recipes.
Excellent.
Right, because honey is a little sweeter than sugar, so
yep,
that makes
yep.
sense.
And it's the greatest thing on earth. and I used to watch, when I was a kid, my great-uncle Fritz would put on a set of light coveralls and a straw hat and light up an unfiltered Camel and go work his bees without a veil or anything. And he would have bees crawling all over him and never get stung. He talked to them.
Do you buy that, Rick?
I suit up real good. No, but I mean, there is truth. There is truth, though, Jim, that if you go in the middle of the summer, warm day, wear light-colored clothing, don't move too crazy too fast, you can get away without heavy equipment.
Yep, I would stand maybe 10 feet away and watch him work his bees, and it was just absolutely amazing to me.
Well, that's great.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Nice story. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Have a good one.
Yeah, have a great weekend. 1-800-348-2551. The final pre-fun drive edition of Vox Pop is a Food Friday, and we're having a good time. Let's go to Ray in Great Barrington. Ray.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey.
Couple things. Talking about nasty tasting honey.
Yeah.
I grew up on the edge of the Pioneer Valley. Connecticut River Valley was awash in cigar tobacco, and it is the nastiest.
Really?
Oh, tobacco honey. Interesting.
Yeah, I got into raising bees in the 4-H when I was 10. And moving along, by the way, if you have a hives like that, you should see a doctor.
If you have a what?
Never mind. Making things like fudge, for example, with regular sugar. You boil it down until it apparently crystallizes and forms hard fudge when it cools. I can't see any reason you couldn't do that with honey. What do you think?
Well, the first thing I would do is find a recipe for a fudge that uses honey, you know, or if you want to experiment, go for it.
I've used my grandmother's and my mother's recipe. It's great fudge.
It's made with honey?
I was thinking, no.
So you substitute?
The problem, now that I think about it, would be the proportion that was someone just spoke of honey and sugar sweetness and so on, being successful at having it either not be a rock or not be mush.
Right, and sugar definitely has qualities that you will never get in honey, like as far as baking goes, you know, that crispiness from cookies. Or,
well, your certain, chocolate chip cookies are quite crispy.
Yeah, or certain textures that, you know, are a little different that you'll never get from, you know, well, sometimes you can't substitute sugar.
What do you typically recommend, as also someone else mentioned?
So as a substitute, as a ratio?
Yes. How much honey as compared to sugar?
Well, you can substitute all of it. In some recipes, it's just a matter of experimenting with it. So if you have a recipe that you like and you want to substitute the sugar with honey, you can just substitute all of it if you want. Maybe use a little less because it is sweeter. It's up to 1.5 times sweeter. Honey.
Okay, I think that's what he was looking for.
1.5 times
sweeter. I think I'm going to be in the laboratory doing kitchen chemistry.
Right.
Yeah.
And what, can I make one
Food
last
science.
Comment?
Sure.
I've never heard... I'm aware of this syndrome or whatever, worldwide, killing bees. But I've never heard of them leaving the hive in the winter or anything like that and just dying out there. I thought that it was some form of bacteria or virus or fungus or something.
It does have a name. It's called colony collapse syndrome.
I've heard,
And the characteristic is strange. The bees will do a suicide march out of the hive. And if you go into a hive and you see the bees head down and there's no honey, that means they ran out of food. They starved. But if you go
what
in...
What do you mean by head down?
Well, if they're licking the cells and their heads are pointed in... They've run out of food. But if you go into a hive and there's no bees, it's more characteristic of colony collapse. And
I've seen hives, actually, when I first started, I took too much honey.
Yeah.
Well, you learned that
lesson. Well, it's kind of like what's happening with the bats.
Yes.
White pet, and, of course, amphibians all over the world.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you go, and I can see I'll be in the kitchen. In fact, I'll drop a note to the station.
Oh, please do.
Thank you.
Write us at voxpop@wamc.org. Thank you for the call, Ray. Let's go to Lori in Holyoke. Lori.
Hello. first of all, I have really enjoyed local honey in our region in the Pioneer Valley. And thankfully, I haven't had the type with tobacco.
tobacco honey.
Sounds awful.
Right.
Can't get it lit.
Nicotine honey.
Yeah, yuck. Nobody needs that. My question is, I've heard rumor of and don't know the facts about honey being mass-produced. You know, I kind of picture it out in the Midwest and taking all these beehives and wrapping them in cellophane and moving them around and all sorts of weird things that sound like a terrible thing to do to any insects. Is this true? Is this made up? Are there things that are happening in the honey world, you know, in the mass producing, manufacturing of
all right.
it?
We get it.
That,
we,
yeah.
Well,
like that?
For instance, when I move hives locally, I move them at night. So I just put them on a truck. I don't cover them with a net. And they stay in the box. And if it's a cool night, I can get them to the apple orchard and back. And it's less stress. But if you're a big beekeeper, I have over 100 hives. That's not a lot. But if you're a big beekeeper and you're moving them into Florida and you're moving them into Maryland and you're moving them to the almond groves in California, you put them on big trucks, cover them with nets, and it's a stressor. I mean, they're moved for days, and hopefully, they don't get overheated and died. And it's like the nursing model. You're going to add another stressor. And if you keep doing it, you're going to lose the bees. I mean, there are notorious cases of people that are pushing the bees too hard, getting honey in the winter down in Florida, moving them up, getting honey in North Carolina, and pushing them. And, hey, eventually they give up.
So it's true. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with Diane Whitten and Rick Green and the home stretch here on A Food Friday.
Support for WAMC comes from Spirit House Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings, Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Ackerman's Appliance, Hudson. For 37 years, a locally owned dealer of appliance brands such as Sub-Zero, Wolf, Blue Star, Bosch, and more. Showroom on Warren Street, ackermansappliance.net. Brookshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington. Offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, berkshire.coop. And NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And if you get a busy signal, try it again here in the waning 18 minutes or so. Rick Green is here. He runs Ballston Lake Apiaries. And Diane Whitten, who is a food and nutrition educator. And Diane, you have some stuff coming up.
Oh, I wanted to mention a class that I have coming up. It's called Get Your Food Business Off the Ground and Growing. It's for people maybe like Rick who make mead or make, you know, their honey and then they want to try to market it. It's going to be April 8th at the Cornell Cooperative Extension office in Boston Spa.
Okay.
All day from 9 to 5. I'm going to have some great guests. I'm going to have someone from the Department of Ag and Markets talking about the licensing you need to, you know, start a food business, start selling retail. Someone from the Cornell Food Venture Center who help you with, like, recipe development and can help with marketing. And then some two other women from the New York Small Scale Food Processors Association who have been in the small scale food business for a long time and have tons of advice to share. And
are people rushing to jump into this sort of thing?
I think there's a lot of people who are trying to get into start their own small food business. We've got quite a few at the Saratoga Farmers
Absolutely.
Market. Yep. You know, people making their own pickles and
peanut butter.
We've got the Saratoga peanut butter. She started maybe 10 years ago, and she's been very successful, and she's, you know, selling it. So people can make money selling your own food product.
A number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Jim in Albany. Jim, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey.
Thanks for the great program.
Thank you.
I got some unfiltered honey here, and I have no idea what unfiltered means. Is that the same as unheated?
No.
No?
Raw honey means it's unfiltered and it's unheated. If you heat honey, you damage it. If you put it through a fine filter, believe it or not, you can take the pollen out, and you can't determine the country of origin. What some people are doing is sneaking in nasty honey from China, filtering it so the pollen's gone, so you can't see the crazy trees in China and analyze the source. So it's two issues. It's filtering and heating. They both aren't good for honey.
Well, thank you, Rick. Hey, look, I got unfiltered clover honey here. Does that mean it could be heated?
Yes. Most honey, you have to warm a little just to get it in the jar. When honey's harvested in the fall, in a few months, if you don't do something, it's going to crystallize like this cream I have here.
Oh, it's so good.
So I should get the raw, unheated honey then, right? This is a health food store in Albany here, and apparently
ideally,
they're heating the honey.
Yeah, the government's relaxed their rules. They said, well, you can heat it a little, and you can still call it raw.
Oh, I see.
Traditional people like myself say, hey, no heat's the best.
Okay. Hey. Thank you very much.
Jim, yes, sir. Thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. So the honey from China is nasty? I think that's what you said?
Yeah. In fact, I have a close friend that sells honey back to China because they know how bad it is, because they use chemicals and things that are banned in other countries to keep these diseases down. And the honey is laced with, and if it's tested, it has stuff in it that you don't want to eat.
Well, don't they test things like that that come from other countries to be served in grocery stores?
Every boat they test, every barrel of honey they test, but
maybe
that's not
maybe
true.
Maybe 1% of all the food that's imported actually gets tested.
So why, if there is so much honey in this country, would we need to import any?
Well, the demand is much higher. And like Diane says, if you can get it and you're a processor and you bake with it and you don't really care as long as it says honey, hey, lowest price wins.
It's very tough to find the country of origin then once it's filtered.
Well, you can analyze it. You can take it to Cornell and say, check that pollen, see which country it came from.
That's pretty amazing that they can do that.
Yeah.
So they all have a fingerprint, I guess you could
say. Exactly.
Yeah, it's like honey forensics.
Don in Glenville. Don, you're on.
Oh, hi. Great program here.
Thank you.
Enjoying it. My question is, I have a very nice property with, it used to be a flower farm, and I've got open fields, a lot of clover, a lot of good things that I think the bees would like, apple trees. Can I get a beekeeper to come and bring hives here in exchange for maybe a little bit of honey, at the end of the year?
Fair. That's a fair ask. A commercial beekeeper is going to say, look, I'm not going to go to your property unless I can drop off 40, 60 hives, which you don't want in Glenville. If you go to the Cornell Cooperative Extension, go to a beekeeper's meeting or put your name on Craigslist, you might find a local guy that would love to bring over one or two hives. So you got to find the right person that will be willing to park a couple hives, and they probably will live close to you.
Okay, so you're saying that it would have to be a small amount. I mean, I do have a big area here. I'm secluded from all the other houses, and I've
Well, a bee will fly two miles.
So
a commercial person is going to say, look, I want to bring in 40, 60 hives, and I want them to fly in a two-mile radius and see nothing but clover. And I've been to Glenville. It's not that much clover.
No, I do have a couple acres of open field with a lot of clover.
That, you're talking one or two hives, that's all.
Yeah, okay. So
you might consider buying a hive yourself. People are.
I thought about it, but with all the problems and all the learning curve, and I've known people that have tried it and not done well and had them die, and I've got a million other things going on, I'd rather let somebody that knows what they're doing come in and do it and then just, get a little...
Yep.
At the end of the year. And
your nearest club, the nearest club is Southern Adirondack Beekeepers Association, right in Diane's town, Ballston Spa.
Okay.
And go to a meeting and say, stand up and say, I want a hive.
Okay.
Somebody
and
might.
If you call the Cornell Cooperative Extension office at 885-8995, they could probably tell you when the next meeting is going to be.
Okay. All right. I'll give that a try. Sounds good.
Thanks, Don.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
So, Rick, what's the first mistake, the worst mistake that a first-timer would do when, starting a hive?
That's what my book's about, Apis mellifera, a.k.a. honeybee. I've said the truth. Don't buy anything.
Really?
The first year, get a suit and find a beekeeper and donate your time and travel. It's a sort of business you can't learn from a book. You can't learn.
What about as a hobby?
Again, you got to read. You should be reading now. You should get every catalog. Better Bee, right up here in Schuylerville, has one of the best catalogs in the country. We'll go page to page to page. Read everything you can. Get a suit. Travel with a beekeeper. And at the end of the year, you'll say, oh, my gosh, this is just what I wanted to do, or I can't. I'm glad I didn't spend $500 and get started.
Ah, okay. And so what's the percentage of people who say, gosh, this was a dumb idea. I'm never doing this again.
Well, if you look in Craigslist, you'll see a lot of used equipment.
Good indication.
All right, let's go to Jim on the Mass Pike. Jim, I hope your hand's free.
Yes, I'm embarrassed. I hate to see people talking on their phones in the car, and here I am doing it because I have such an interest in beekeeping.
Well, you're
for many years, I wanted to be a beekeeper, and I'm a procrastinator too. But I have a very curious question. I heard him mention earlier about they bring the hives inside in some areas, probably.
Yeah, up in Montreal, it's a notorious technique up there because the winters are so cold, but not down here.
So it's not necessary. Oh, okay, it's not needed here.
No.
But I have an unused, unheated garage, uninsulated, that never gets below 32 degrees. If I was to bring the hive into the garage so they could have it, do they need to get, you said they come out, they come out in the winter. Do they need to go outside, or
yes,
would they just roam about the garage?
This is a funny little fact that nobody wants to talk about. It's called a cleansing flight, and they're eating honey, okay? From December on, their belly gets full of honey. Guess what they have to do? They have to take a little flight out into the snow on a warm day and come back in. So they do need to get rid of the waste, and your garage wouldn't be nice.
Okay, unless I drilled a big hole in the wall.
Yes, that would work.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks a lot. Drive safely, especially if it's snowing out there. Let's go to Jim now in New Jersey. Jim, where are you in New Jersey?
Montclair, New Jersey.
Nice to have you on the show. You are on.
Thanks. A question for Diane. I was wondering if people with diabetes can eat honey. Would that be harmful for them?
Yes, as a matter of fact. And how are you doing, Jim? It's good to hear from you.
Good, very well.
And I want to give a shout out to, I have some other family down in northern New Jersey who might be listening online. So,
all right.
For diabetics, honey is just as bad as sugar. It has a lot of carbohydrates. One tablespoon of honey has 15 grams of carbohydrate, which is about equal to a slice of bread. So, yeah, for a diabetic, it's not a sugar substitute.
So it's a non-starter.
Yeah, it's not a sugar substitute.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
But that was a great question.
Jim, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go to Anna in Altamont. You're on.
Yes. I'm so glad to have heard you. I, too, was on the highway, but I've pulled over, and I'm sitting in a parking lot. In any case, this is my question. Many years ago, my mother decided to keep bees and had about less than a dozen hives, and plenty of honey. And then one very cold winter, they perished. But what we didn't know at the time was that they moved into the house where it's warm.
And wonderful.
And so now for about 15 years, my mother has since passed away, and I have the house. So for about 15 years, they've been living in the master bedroom. And, you know, we see them coming out. There's a linden tree right outside.
Beautiful.
That they love.
Do you think those are honeybees, Rick?
It's not clear whether they're honeybees or wild bees, because there are wild bees on the property as well in a different part. But in any case, my question is, you know, how can we get rid of these bees in a humane way? Can the...
Well, I do remove honeybees from buildings.
You do.
And you could find a local beekeeper, and they would come over. You can use a stethoscope, and in the middle of winter, you can assess the wall, and you can see the area. The other bees don't live through the winter. It's only the honeybee. So if in the middle of winter you put your ear up there and you're hearing something, you've got honeybees.
Oh, they're without a doubt.
Yeah. All right, you've got honeybees.
Well, that's good to know.
And they're very healthy honeybees, too.
Would she have honey up there in her attic?
Well, the linden tree or the basswood makes a honey that is ultra light, like water. It's prized honey. I mean, if you can park your hives near a linden tree, you're in good shape.
Yeah. Mm. So if I get in touch with you, you can come out and assess the situation.
I'm going to charge you. I would strongly recommend you finding somebody first in your area. And there's a ton of beekeepers down in that Altamont area.
That's a good idea.
Just put an ad in. Just put an ad in Craigslist and saying, "Help! I need somebody to come and get the bees out."
Okay, and then one other question. Then, will I pay them to do this, or will they pay me for the queen?
Well, I would definitely negotiate. What'll happen sometimes is you'll pay them, and then they'll walk out with 100 pounds of honey, which is about $6 a pound. So keep in mind that the honey has value. So you have something valuable. It just happens to be in your master bedroom.
Okay.
And does it mean that we'll have to completely take the walls down and clear everything out?
I love to tell people, when I come out and leave, you're going to need a carpenter. Because when you go after them, you're ripping sheetrock, you're pulling down. When I'm done, the bees are gone, but there's a big hole in the wall.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, okay.
Well, way to sell it, Rick. Nice job.
No, it's a good. You got to set people's expectations.
Right. Anna,
we've got to be realistic about this.
Appreciate
it. Okay, and I appreciate that.
Fair
okay,
enough.
Well, thank you so much. It's
all
been
right.
A pleasure to get this information. It's really way overdue for me.
Boy, you're really the spokesman for beekeepers, aren't you? Well done. Do you remember, did you ever go to the old Altamont Fair way
yes,
back when?
Yes.
And they had, in the old building, I think it burned down, and they had all those honeycombs.
Yeah.
Oh, that was something.
Saratoga Fair every year brings observation hives. It's most fairs now, you look around, they have a nice observation hive. It's a beautiful thing.
All right,
to
let's
see.
Go to Janet in Greenwich. Janet, you're on.
Yes, and my son-in-law got the start with beekeeping 4 years ago now with Better Bee in Greenwich, New York. I want to put in a little correction on that if people are looking for it. They provide a good program, but I simply want to encourage people to be aware of how their foods are processed. The comment about honey being tainted, if you will, for another word, I think it's a very good point. And years back, I thought, well, gee, here we have an apple juice that's saying, you know, all natural, but and it's not from concentrate, and yet the apples they were using were imported. And I did call about that, and yes, there was no testing being done. So I think that's something to be very, very aware of, and even ask the beekeepers those questions, whether something is raw or filtered or processed in any way is certainly good. And in light of your comments just recently about the fairs, I encourage all those 4-H'ers out there to get their honey recipes and make their products and submit them into the fair. I remember Ludwig's at Saratoga Fair, and that's where we got our start with those open displays of the hives, which was fascinating.
Are you a judge? Do you judge food at the fair? Because I've done that at the Saratoga County Fair when people can submit their jam recipe, their cookie recipe, their bread recipe, you know, with anything, and then we have to judge it. So it's a hard.
I've been
hard
on the other
hard
end
job.
Of it. I'll win the prize.
Okay,
right,
but yeah, thanks for mentioning 4-H.
But we're being very successful, and we're just a little curious about locations, because we had a hive that was in what we thought would be a good place, a shelter place. That one did not survive. But the ones that are out on the crest of the hill right in the wind,
yep,
they have been thriving. So it's kind of a curious...
Counterintuitive, yeah?
Curious thing we have been wondering about. If the gentleman might make a comment about the different types of honeybees.
Okay.
Thought that was interesting. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet.
Well, there's 4 different varieties around the earth that collect surpluses and live through the year. Ours came from Europe. It came over, with the pilgrims. Ours is called the European honeybee, and it makes a surplus. It's learned how to live in the winter, and you talk about windswept hives on a hill. That doesn't bother the bees. They've adapted. They know how to form a ball, a cluster, and stay warm in the winter. It's interesting. There's a lot of subspecies. You can get a Russian queen, a Carolingian queen, an Italian queen. It's a designer world out there, and your queen is everything. And
Well, I guess that's where we'll have to leave it. Boy, what an interesting program. I learned so much, and the honey was so delicious. And Diane, thanks for the cookies and
you're
the
welcome.
Jam.
You're welcome. Glad you enjoyed them.
Oh, so good.
Support. Maybe we'll have some mead now.
All right. I guess it's now you've made it through the program. Now it's time. Support comes from Sundog Cider at Salacqua, locally produced hard cider from New York Hudson Valley apples, unfiltered, naturally gluten-free, handcrafted at a revitalized solar-powered mill in Chatham, New York, sundogcider.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts, over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more, harolds.com. Wow, fun show. Thanks again to Rick Green and Diane Whitten and all of you who listened and all who called in. And remember, you can find out much more about our guests and the tips and recipes we discussed, WAMC.org. Just do a quick search for Food Friday. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Very nice job, Zach. Barb King took your calls today. Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer and food server. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Remember, the fun drive starts Monday at 6 a.m. Let's feed the lockbox and make it a short one. Have a great weekend.